89.3 FM.
This is member supported.
The PFW, Washington.
Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon, and I am right here with
Mark Levine.
And you're listening to News Views here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. A lot of interesting things always going on News Views, a lot of interesting guests, and a lot of lively conversation. And today, we are going to talk with you. We're going to open up the phones a little earlier than normal. We've got an interesting subject to discuss. Mark and I will certainly take great pleasure in discussing it, but it's News Views, and we want to hear your views. Rand Paul, one of our favorite libertarians here in the United States, who's disguising himself at times as a conservative. But Rand Paul made his way over to Howard University and gave a speech, a very interesting speech, some of it which he may have actually believed, and there are parts of it that I may say he stretched the truth a bit, shall we say. We're going to talk about it with you. Let me start with Mark. I have my thoughts on it. But I want to start with Mark. I want to hear a different, unique opinion. And Mark, if there's anyone I know that's going to have a unique opinion, it's going
to
be Mark.
I'll tell you, I listened to the entire speech. I just finished listening to all the questions. And it was amazing to me because I actually think Rand Paul, like his father, is sincere, but I think he's incredibly clueless. I don't think he understands that Black America is a lot smarter than he gives African Americans credit for, and that so the heart of his argument was that the Republican Party is the party of Lincoln, of course, the party of emancipation, the party of abolition. After all, the Democrats were the people who did Jim Crow. That's absolutely true. 1890s, 1920s, the Republican Party is NAACP. He talks about all that history, and then comes 1968, and history stops.
Right, yeah.
And bingo, it's 50 years later. And it's fascinating to me because, I mean, he's right to praise the Republican Party of the 19th century. I mean, he's right to praise the abolitionists, and we can talk about Thaddeus Stevens all we want, or Frederick Douglass, for that matter, great Republican heroes. But he never mentioned Nixon's Southern strategy. He never mentioned Ronald Reagan, and he seems to, I don't know whether he thought he could put one over on people, which is maybe what you thought, or he sincerely believes, as he claimed, the Republican Party hasn't changed since then. And the Howard University audience was terrific. They were respectful, but they weren't having any of it. They understand that when the Civil Rights era came, that the Democrats that were the Southern Dixiecrats that supported segregation, they all became Republicans. And the Democratic Party, John F. Kennedy and, of course, Lyndon Johnson, signed away the South for a generation, the White South, when the Civil Rights Act was passed. And then Richard Nixon made a very conscious effort to appeal to racism in the Southern strategy. That history, that wasn't mentioned in his speech. And I think Rand Paul is right that many white Americans don't know this history. But I don't think there are many African Americans that don't know this history.
Yeah, and I think he's attempting to put one over on the people, on these black students and on black America. And
what he doesn't realize is
that black Americans know history very, very well when it comes to the issue of race and the names of parties. And herein lies the false reality that he's attempting to create. When he says the, quote, Republican Party did this, the inference is that the Republican Party was the right wing and the Democrats were the left wing.
Right.
When the fact of the matter is, let's just get rid of the word Republican and Democrat and let's use the words right and left.
Or conservative and liberal.
Conservative and liberals. All of a sudden, everything that Rand Paul changes, said, changes.
Right.
When he says the Republican Party has always been fought for civil rights and they were abolitionists, if we change that name, what do we say? The liberals, the progressives
right.
were the abolitionists and
That's
the conservatives
right. Right.
were the slave owners,
right.
number one. If he says any all these wonderful things that he's saying that the, quote, Republican Party, if we use, remember, Republican and Democrat is just a label. And these labels changed. Now, furthermore, during the Civil War, leading up to the Civil War, the Democrats were in the South, and Lincoln led the Republicans, the Whigs, the Know-Nothings, who were the North, right? Well, isn't it a funny thing? The right-wing conservative is still based in the South, and the left-wing progressive is still based in the North and Northeast. The people are the same. The cultures are the same. He just happened to use the words that pretended Lincoln was the left. Lincoln was a man that said, we should tax the rich. Because, hey, there ain't, one of the issues is there ain't enough of them to vote so we can win. He supported organized labor. Lincoln clearly was the left. And the South and Jefferson Davis clearly was the right. Because they had different names, they claim a guy who's, the fact of the matter is, we could go all the way up until, you know, Eisenhower and Nixon, who these guys would call liberals next to the clowns we have today.
Certainly,
but it is a very, very familiar tune. It's a very familiar trick that Republicans of today try to use. They try to use the label Republican, apply it to people who were the left, who were the liberals, progressives, whatever you want to call them, who fought all throughout the history, who fought for the rights of minorities. The conservatives, the right wing has always fought for individual rights. Liberty is the term. If you look at today, if you look at all of the things around the Tea Party, what's the word they always use? Liberty. Black people are freedom people. Liberty is individualism. Freedom is group rights. The issue here is this. Rand Paul and the libertarians and the conservatives, they support individual rights, not whereas the left has always supported protections, because people, if you're black, if you're gay, if you're a female, if you're any group that is not the power group of power, as a group, you need protections. Individual protections aren't going to help you. What Rand Paul didn't get into was the reality of what he really stands for. If you're about individual protection, the only people who don't need group protections are the people with all the power.
Here's the thing. There's so many elements of the speech I want to talk about. And I actually strongly suggest that you go, I got it from C-SPAN, so there was no commentary. Listen to the speech and listen to the questions.
And the Wall Street
afterwards.
Journal has the text. On their blog, it has the
well
actual
worth
text
it,
from
but
it.
But make sure you hear the questions after it.
Okay.
And some were not so good, but some were dead on. But so there's a number of things. So in the speech, he quotes Dr. King, which I thought interesting. He called him MLK. Which I don't know. I just Dr. King, you know, a little bit of respect. MLK, JFK, I don't know. Seemed kind of informal, but all right. So he talks about Dr. King saying MLK, and he says that MLK believed that any time the majority votes to take away the rights of a minority and forces a minority to do things that majority doesn't have to obey, that's a problem. And of course, Dr. King was right about that. And Rand Paul quotes that, and so far so good. And he says, but it's not just about race. Again, so far so good. You could apply it to gender, sexual orientation, religion, certainly. But then he says to this audience, he says, you could apply it to bankers.
No, you can't apply it to bankers. You got to protect bankers.
I laughed out loud when he said that. There's a huge difference between protecting African Americans or gay people or people of minority religions or women and protecting bankers. Bankers are not a class. Banker, you're not born to be a banker. Maybe a few people are. I mean, banker is a chosen profession. You've got to regulate banking so it doesn't harm the rest of us. I don't think that bankers are historically persecuted or mistreated or denied rights. And the fact that in his mind, Dr. King's wisdom could be applied to bankers, it just showed me how much he doesn't get it. I would love this speech because I don't know. He strikes me, believe it or not, he strikes me as sincere. Sincerely deluded and sincerely clueless. But he didn't strike me as like, I don't know, the Mitch McConnell kind of guy or the Rick Santorum or the Mitt Romney that knows they're lying when they say it.
Right.
I actually think he believes this very perverse construction of civil rights. I'll just give you one more example
sure.
that again, I thought was amazing. It came up in the question and answer session. So the guy says, I was an intern for Obama, the young man says, and I've just come back from all the states where they're trying to keep African-Americans from voting. And Garland, you and I talked at length on this program and others about all the many states and the way the legislatures are trying to make it really hard for blacks and young people to vote and people without picture IDs. And
pretty
so
much
forth.
Anybody who would vote for a Democrat.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. And of course, the Justice Department has stopped a lot of that. The Civil Rights Act has stopped a lot of that.
Right.
We've talked about that umpteen times.
Right.
I can't count
infinitum.
How many times we've talked about that. So the guy brings up voting rights, and Rand Paul gives an answer that would be perfectly appropriate in 1950. But he talked about literacy tests. He talked about grandfather clauses. He talked about the ways that blacks were kept from voting in the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. He seemed to have no clue about how blacks have been kept from voting in 2012, in 2011. It's almost like his speech would have been a great speech to give in 1953.
Right.
But today, it's just really... It's astonishing. And I guess he's just clueless. He doesn't know how the Republican Party today is harming black people.
Well, rather than clueless, I would use a different term that's often used in psychology, and that is motivated reasoning.
Okay. All right.
When
purposely deluded.
Yeah, because,
he's deluding himself.
Here's what happens. When we want to believe something, there's a term, I forgot of it, it's like the fair young, fair young woman. The analogy is, a guy meets a beautiful young girl and anything you say about she's perfect in his eyes and anything he finds out about her that isn't perfect, he ignores it because
she's so pretty.
Yeah, he wants to believe that she's perfect. Right. Well, that's what happens. Motivated reasoning. You want to believe in your ideology and all the tenets and pillars of it. You want to believe these things. So any information that comes in, you filter through a lens that is motivated to direct all of your information towards what you want to believe. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, both on the left and right. When we think about people that we strongly disagree with, often you'll hear people say, that person is stupid or ignorant. That person is dumb. They're not stupid. They're not, many times they're very, very intelligent.
They're sincerely deluded.
And in fact, there's been studies that have shown that people who are ideologues, the more educated and knowledgeable they get, the more staunchly they believe in some of the most ridiculous ideological beliefs, because they only use their as they further their knowledge, their intellect, their knowledge, the information, they use that for their motivated reasoning, so they can make an even stronger case for the absurd ideas that they believe. But look, speaking of absurd ideas, Mark and I have plenty of them, but I'm sure you have some really, really good ones. And this is News Views. This is WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon and Mark Levine here. And we want you to be a part of it. Rand Paul, libertarianism, Howard University, and, some brilliant young students stood up and asked some great questions and kind of put him on the line. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. You can comment on Rand Paul. You can comment on the speech at Howard University. If you want to comment in general, on the issue of
Republican Party and race.
Yeah, Republican Party and race. Republican Party, the issues of Republican Party and black people. However you want to talk about it, black Republicans, which is something that I don't know. To me, it's like
used to be.
Yeah.
Used to be. Frederick Douglass was a Republican. He mentioned Senator, he actually got the name wrong, Senator Edward Brooks of Massachusetts, who was a great senator. But again, he was 1960s
that's
and 1970s.
That's when the Republican Party was the liberals.
That's when they started to change.
And the funny thing is, the Republican
Massachusetts used to be a Republican state.
That's it. The Republican Party of that Republican Party was based in the Northeast.
That's right.
Just like the Liberals Party of today is based in the Northeast. The culture in the Northeast has not changed. The culture in the South, it's changed, but overall it still has the same more left or leaning, centrist leaning than the South. The South is still very red. What we used to call the gray states, are now the red states.
Lay a map of
the Confederate and the Union states, and you're going to get the same thing. So there's a pretense here. There's a big falsity, a falsity, and they use it with Lincoln, and they use it through all the civil rights and Jim Crow saying, but now they will admit, he even admits, oh yes, the racism in the South. But he says the Democrats in the South, as if these are not the ancestors and the cultural ancestors of the people there today.
Exactly. One more thing that's really important to point out, and this is where I think he went beyond being sincerely deluded and just lied. And that's when he claimed to never be against the Civil Rights Act. Now, if anyone who's seen that wonderful interview Rachel Maddow did with him, Rand Paul actually gave a classically conservative argument against civil rights that used to be said all the time. I remember in law school, I read William F. Buckley. Yep. I read Ronald Reagan made this argument, and the argument is this. And Rand Paul, when you if you corner him and he doesn't think he's on tape and he thinks he's talking libertarians, will sincerely say this argument again. The argument goes something like this. We can stop the government from being racist, but we can't stop individuals from being racist. The famous case is Ollie's Barbecue for the Supreme Court. Ollie didn't want to serve black people, and he said, I'm a private institution. I can serve anyone I want. And the Civil Rights Act says, no, if you are open to the public, a movie theater was private, but you can't segregate. Restaurants were private, but you can't segregate. And the Civil Rights Act, of course, was not just about voting. It did a vitally important thing. It required private people to not discriminate when their facilities are open to the public.
Right.
It's the reason why blacks today can sleep in hotels and go to restaurants and sit with white people in movie theaters. That was a vitally important part of the Civil Rights Act, which Rand Paul and his generation and conservatives of his generation strongly opposed. And to this day, he'll tell you he opposes because he doesn't think we can regulate private people.
Well, and keep in mind something, and even that's a fraud for this reason. Even that's fraudulent, because the argument is the government should not tell landowners or business owners that they have to or don't have to serve people,
that's
right?
That's their argument.
Okay, so the government shouldn't enforce these things. However, they do believe that the government should enforce the rights of the owner of the restaurant. In other words, old black and Jewish Mark walk in and we say, hey, we'd like some fries.
Right.
And the guy says, sorry, I don't serve blacks and Jews.
Right.
Well, now, the guy calls the police, and we say, well, we're not leaving. The guy calls the police, and the police comes in and locks us up being on his property and having the audacity to come in there and order fries when he clearly has a sign that says, we don't serve blacks and Jews here.
And let me tell you something. If Rand Paul had come before this audience and said, you know what? I used to believe that. I was taught to believe that. That was the old conservative principles. William F. Buckley believed that. Ronald Reagan, my father, believed that. And I thought about it, and I was wrong. And I was sincerely apologized. Let me tell you why I was wrong. I've come to understand that when it comes to discrimination, there is no private public distinction. He could have given a speech, a real, you know, mea culpa, I'm sorry speech, that actually would have given him a standing ovation at that audience at Howard University. And he could say, and I'm going to work with the Republican Party to reclaim the principles of old, to reclaim Abraham Lincoln. There is a speech that Republicans can give.
They'd have to reclaim something that was never there in the first place, but he could have said
there
that.
There is a speech Republicans can give for African Americans. They've just never given it.
You're right. And the bottom line is this, the Republicans, that would mean that you would have to admit that groups of people, black people, Jewish people, gay people, women, Latinos, that groups have a right to be protected by the government from attack, oppression, etc. And of course, he will never admit that groups even exist, much less that they have a right to be protected by the government. But we have Roderick here, and 202, if you want to call in, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893, we're talking Rand Paul, Howard University speech, race, the Republican Party, government. Roderick, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Roderick, you're on the air.
I hope Roderick's on the air.
Do we have Roderick?
Do we have Roderick? We might not have Roderick. Roderick.
Did we lose him?
If you're not there, feel free to call back in. We're trying here. 202-588-0893. We must have lost Roderick. Maybe
sorry.
He hang up.
Maybe
Roderick might have hit a bad spot. He might have been on a beltway or somewhere, whatever. But anyway, Roderick, call back. 202-588-0893. And listen to what he's, read this part of his speech. He says, no Republican questions or disputes civil rights. I've never wavered. Listen to this. I have never wavered in my support for civil rights or the Civil Rights Act. Well, think about it, Mark. He didn't waver now. He did not waver. He was very clear.
He was very clear.
That he didn't. Well, wait a minute. Let me change that. Up until that.
Right.
I guess he was wavering now when
he said that.
So he says, well, we've got Roderick. Roderick, yeah. Welcome to WPFW.
Hi,
thanks
Roderick.
For calling.
Yes, as you gentlemen were saying, somehow we must have been disconnected.
That's okay. Thanks for calling back.
But anyway, what I want to say is what you guys so brilliantly said just a few minutes ago. A lot of these people, with certain terms that they use, they were brought up thinking that they were all right, not really knowing that they were derogatory. Like some people would use the N-word,
right.
And it was used so much by their parents, they thought it was normal. Just a few days ago, you gentlemen noticed in the mail, I mean, not in the mail, but on the TV, they were talking about wetback.
Right, yeah.
That
right.
Word,
Don Young of Alaska.
The guy grew up, and his father used it, his father's grandfather, aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
So he grew up thinking, but he should have known.
It's like, my whole family was racist. We used it all the time. That's basically he was saying. Please excuse me, we used it all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And basically what I want to say, piggybacking on what you all are saying, the Republican Party, as everybody knows, used to be the liberal party. It had people like Abraham Lincoln and other people, Thaddeus Stevens. But then they started to get more conservative, and their ideology was not liberal. And the Democratic Party used to be the conservative party.
That's
the
true.
Democrats made all the laws to keep people back. But then a great shift occurred. When they started voting for Franklin Roosevelt, most black people started to vote Democrat.
Yep.
They switched from the Republican Party.
There was a number of shifts,
Democrats
actually.
Democrats have a lot that they that are worse than the Republicans, because when Fannie Lou Hamer went before the Democratic committee to talk, they didn't want her to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it was a gradual process of change in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, but you still have people today in both parties who are very conservative. Obama, a lot of his programs have not been voted against by Republicans, but by Democrats.
Yeah.
So you have people
not too
who
many.
On
there
both sides
few.
Of the aisle who are anti-progressive, who want to keep things the way they are. But I want to say what you gentlemen is talking about is so true. And one more question I have is,
sure.
are you all ever going to have on Terry D. Kester?
we'd love to. You know what? Call WPFW and ask them about that.
Yeah. But
thank you, gentlemen, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Yeah, he brought up some good points, and there was, in fact, the last really major shift. Interestingly enough, that he brings up civil rights. The last major shift of conservatives leaving the Democratic Party, going to the Republican Party, was when Lyndon Baines Johnson. How ironic! When he signed the Civil Rights Act, the racists in the South all said, well, you know, son of a gun, we're right-wing racist. There's no place for us in the Democratic Party, for goodness sakes. Therefore, equality for black people. That was the final shift.
And Lyndon
major
Johnson,
shift.
To his credit, knew exactly what he was doing.
He even said it.
Specifically said, I'm signing away the South for a generation. Unfortunately, he didn't know it'd be two generations. But Lyndon Johnson knew that, and yet he believed in the war on poverty. He believed in ending racism. He was an amazing man, and he did that. And it also should be said that it wasn't an accident that these shifts happened. Richard Nixon made a very conscious decision. They called it the Southern Strategy. In fact, John Stewart did a wonderful play on Rand Paul's speech. If you haven't seen that, that's worth checking out.
I've heard about it.
You got to see
I'm
it.
Sure
where he quotes from the Southern Strategy, where Nixon writes down that we should support. Interesting. This is amazing. The Machiavellian nature of this. We should support blacks voting because every black that votes in the South will mean two more whites join the Republican Party.
Yep.
And so he wanted blacks to vote to get more Republicans because they knew they hated blacks voting, and he knew that would get the South Republican. And Nixon was right. I mean, it's very it's Machiavellian, but he was accurate.
That's the reality. And we've got who do we have on line one? Troy, welcome to WPFW. Thanks for calling. Troy, you're gonna have to turn your radio down, or you'll get an echo that'll confuse us all.
Great. Yeah, I just had a quick comment to make about the point that you were making earlier about Rand Paul when he had mentioned about property rights, and making a point where he was willing to use the government and legislature to protect property rights. And that just flies in the same ideology of capitalism, talking about, you know, property owners have the rights to dictate and do different things and not necessarily pooling from, I guess, the consortium of the makeup of the country as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an interesting point that you had made, that he would be advocating using that for the benefit of property owners. But like I said, that ties directly into their ideology about capitalism, private property, being the ownership
Yeah, it does.
And owners of society. But I'll take your comments offline.
Thanks. That is a brilliant point.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, and it's actually one that one of the students at Howard University made. It's a point that I often make when I go on conservative television. In fact, I said this on the Glenn Beck show once, and they never invited me back. I said on the Glenn Beck show, I said that liberals believe that blacks are people under the 14th Amendment. Conservatives believe that corporations are people under the 14th Amendment. And like I said, they never invited me back.
Yeah.
But it's true, and good for the student at Howard who broached this question directly to him. He said, you know, was the 40th Amendment designed for corporations? I mean, this is the amendment passed by the radical Republicans of the day to free
the left.
To do more than free the slaves, but to make sure they're all citizens, to make Native American citizens and immigrant citizens. There's the equal protection under the laws.
Right.
That's in the 14th Amendment. It wasn't in the Constitution beforehand. I mean, it's really the heart of pretty much all the rights we have today. And yet, within a generation after the Civil War, the right wing, the Supreme Court, used this amendment, which is supposed to free people,
right,
and instead used it to allow businesses to oppress people.
And
Rand Paul, again, didn't seem to quite get it. He talked about, well, you know, if I get sued as a doctor, I don't want to, you know, lose all my business. And he really just didn't seem to understand.
And also think about that you know, the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. While it arose out of the racism of slavery. If you think about it, how important it was. Just think of how many legal actions that have benefited everyone, people of all races and genders and sexual orientation and on and on. How many legal actions that have helped so many people that have been founded in the 14th Amendment based on equal protection under the law?
It's the single most important part of our Constitution. If I had to boil it all down to one clause, if I had to give up the whole Constitution and just rely on equal protection under the law, that's most of what we need.
We got Rachel. Rachel, thanks for calling. Welcome to WPFW.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. How are you all doing today?
We are wonderful.
Good.
That's good. Listen, you know, I am getting so sick and tired of all of this bickering with these crazy Republicans. You know, I feel like we haven't really progressed. Yeah, I grew up in I was born in the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in the 60s. I saw, you know, the Black Panther movement. I saw, you know, I was quoted the song by James Brown, "Say it loud and I'm black and I'm proud." I remember at those days when I had to, you know, pronounce, I had to show people I was proud of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as though I'm being backed up into the corner of doing that same thing again and showing people that I am a human being, that I'm worthy of having a job, having, you know, income to support my family and myself, and to build a healthy community. I'm tired of this, of these people trying to challenge us and trying to say that we're not worthy of these things. And I feel as though right now, we as a people of color have got to step up and say, you know, enough is enough of this craziness. You know, you got your Michelle Bachmann running around there like a loose goon. You got Rand Paul running around there like a loose goon. Then you got Paul Ryan running around here like a loose goon. And not to mention Boehner and Mitchell. All these people are crazy loose goons. We need to get rid of them. They're stuck into that 19th century mentality about minorities, and it needs to end. They should be the ones they need to understand that this world has changed. We're no longer there, but if we have to, let's bring out the Black Panther. I'm ready to put my bush back on and become the Angela Davis that they don't want to ever see again.
Thank you, Rachel. You know, thank you very much. Great
love
call.
That passion, it is a good call.
And I think you have to keep in mind a couple things. Number one, I think people like that see a person of color being voted into president as a revolution. They see it as a social revolution. And to every revolution, there is a counter revolution. What you're seeing to some extent are people who are very, very upset about what's going on, feeling as though they're making their move to combat it. But we'll be back back. If you're on the line, hold on. We'll be back in a minute. We're going to take a break. WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon, Mark Levine.
Hi, I'm Ephraim Woolfolk, area bassist, teacher, and supporter of WPFW. And you're tuned in to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Hello, welcome back to News Views. We're on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And we're talking about Rand Paul. We're talking about his speech at Howard University, the issue of race, Republicans. Feel free to call in any comment you may have on any of the above. If maybe you heard the speech, or maybe if you're out there, maybe you were there, or you watched it, read the text, whatever. Or if you have a comment to make, any comment is welcome. And
we got
Rachel. Mark's got something to say, but we're going to listen. We're going to get to. We got Kay. Kay, we just had Rachel. Kay, welcome to WPFW.
Thank you.
Hi, Kay.
I'll go to the previous young lady a little better. I was born in the 30s.
Wow.
So I remember, you know, everybody forgets New Deal, FDR, what he could and couldn't do, and
right.
It was those same Southern Democrats that we call the dregs of the Dixie crap that are now Republicans.
Yep. The right.
The only way you could get Social Security, minimum wage, and unemployment, all that through, was to eliminate all the jobs that blacks had.
Precisely. Mm. Yep.
Tenant farmers, farmhands, housemaids.
Yep.
Now, I mean, it took another, I don't know how many years to include them in the workforce.
Well, unions were the same way.
This, and they jump history. If I hear them say anything more about filibuster, and they all say Jimmy Stewart, nobody remembers Strom Thurmond.
That's
for
right.
God's sake,
that's right. Strom Thurmond.
They jump history by decades. But I'll give you one from the 18th century that
okay.
I love. William Hazlitt: "The love of liberty is the love of others. The love of power is the love of ourselves."
Wow.
And that is the current Republican bunch.
I like that quote. I'm going to remember that quote.
Hazlitt. Look it up.
I will. Thank you for that. You know, it's interesting. I actually see Rand Paul a little differently from the other caller mentioned, Michelle Bachmann and Mitt Romney or Paul Ryan or, frankly, Trent Lott, who praised Strom Thurmond until he realized, oops, I guess I can't do that.
Didn't he say we wouldn't have all these
problems?
He said, we wouldn't have all these problems we have today.
If only we had white supremacy.
If they'd have supported the segregationist and put him in.
And this is what Republicans say amongst themselves, and then they're like, oh, wait, no, I can't say that.
There's cameras on.
Right, there's cameras on. To me, what's striking about Rand Paul is, first of all, I actually give him some credit. I mean, he walked into Howard University. He tried to persuade them. He was clueless, but at least he was making an attempt. I actually see him a little bit differently from mainstream Republicans, by which I put the
Michelle Bachmann. Libertarians are different.
They are. The Rick Santorum. Partly, I used to work for Barney Frank. We worked with Ron Paul on legalization of medical marijuana. And many libertarians are very consistent on some things that
yes.
I like, you know, staying out of ending a lot of the drug penalties.
Yep.
And so I agree them on those things. But I would have loved to have cornered Rand Paul and just sit down with him and say, you must know this history. And that the only way to ever appeal to black people is to
tell the truth, for one thing.
Because, you know, it's funny. I think there are white people who don't know the history, who
right.
don't realize NAACP in 1909 were Republicans, or that
right.
you know, Frederick Douglass was a Republican. But blacks know the history, and frankly, educated whites do too. And so it's striking to me that I don't think he was doing a Trent Lott, where he was just sort of like, oh, we love these segregationists. Oops, cameras on.
You're right.
I actually think he sincerely wanted to reach out, but was clueless in understanding how his own party is viewed. When it comes to voting rights, for example,
mm-hmm.
They thought they were talking about the 1920s literacy test when they're actually talking about 2012.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just hopeful, but when I saw that speech, I remember thinking, oh my God, this guy, he needs an education in America.
You know, he went in and he tried to create a reality that didn't exist. You know, kind of remind, I don't know if you ever read Jean Baudrillard's Simulacra and Simulation.
Nope.
But it's about, you know, realities that that, you know, it's about reality and people creating realities that don't exist. But all that aside, he went in and tried to create a reality where the Republican Party, as it is comprised today, has always been on the side of minorities and black people. You know, the Republican Party, as we see it today, ideologically, has always been in the hugged up with black people and African Americans and all the minorities. He tried to create an absurd reality to people who had to know the true reality by their very existence and by the existential threats that they face on a normal basis.
It's interesting. Republican advisors, political advisors, people like Frank Luntz, tell Republicans, you're never going to get the black vote. But if you look like you're appealing to blacks, you can appeal to some moderate white people who want to know that you're not racist. So even though
you're right, yeah.
So actually his argument does have a certain appeal, not to black people.
If you know who he's appealing.
But to, I can imagine some 25-year-old.
Like when Romney went to the NAACP.
Exactly.
Same thing.
Some 25-year-old white kid who might be a libertarian, but doesn't want to know a candidate, doesn't want a candidate who doesn't support civil rights. So by talking to black people, many Republicans are actually trying to appeal to a certain moderate segment of whites who could vote either conservative or liberal.
And here's the other part that he'd have to throw in if he really wanted to be honest here. Now ignore our policies when you listen to this speech. Don't pay attention to any of our policies.
Don't
when you
look
listen
to the man
to this
behind
speech.
The curtain.
Yeah, before we start this, what I want you to do is set aside everything you know about Republican policies and then listen to me. And then afterwards, I want you to continue not to think about our policies. Just think about what I'm saying. Mickey, welcome to WPFW. Thanks for calling.
Hi, just a couple of points. One, I think the challenge is that Rand Paul basically reflected that Americans don't know American history. And
many
it's
don't.
Not about black history, although yes, obviously it is the history of black people in this country. But this is what happens when you don't understand American history, and that these parties have basically switched back and forth depending mm-hmm. on who they wanted to support and where their ideology and what their mindsets were when they switched over and the positions they take now. Number two, we need to stop calling folks conservatives when they are in fact reactionary.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You can be a conservative and completely be appalled by what the Republican Party represents today. In fact, I think a true conservative does reject what the reactionary Republican Party faction of the Republican Party is today. And I'd finally say that I think, unfortunately for Rand Paul, who I believe was making a sincere effort, I think he confused the audience. I don't think he understood that he was going to a college.
Right, educated audience.
With people who might actually know something. I think this is what happens when you don't know any real black people, and the only idea of black people that you may or may not know are through the prisms of popular culture. And let's face it, black popular culture right now really does not reflect the group of people who would know who the heck the founders of the NAACP was or who the Republicans originally were. I doubt very much they understood the salient points of Lincoln the movie, much less even the salient points of Django. They may just have gleaned it just from the popular culture.
And I would even go one further.
Really
and
all I wanted to contribute. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you. And I would even go one further and say the reality that, say, some of the rappers try to project in the black popular culture, it's a reality that doesn't even exist it's a hyper reality. It doesn't exist. Jay-Z is going,
a very tiny
Jay-Z
portion,
is going to rap
all.
About the hood, and he's worth $700 million.
Right, right.
He's flying around in his own plane. The hood, he's got his own hood.
His
house is, you know, his estate is so big, he's got his own hood, and he's rapping about a reality about the hood and bags of weed and crime. And if anybody who looked like they came from the hood came within a block of him, you know, 12
of his bodyguards would.
All of his bodyguards would grab him and throw him out.
I really, really like Mickey's point. I so much packed into what she had to say. I really liked your point because the educated people at Howard University, frankly, showed themselves pretty well. But they aren't shown in popular culture. We do see the worst things, and they're not represented. I mean, since the Cosby Show, I can't think of a popular television program showing educated African Americans. It's a very solid point, and it's a good point for white people who don't know black people and only seeing that through the prism of popular culture. I just thought that was a solid point. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and as far as popular culture, the other problem that a lot of black people have about movies is this: we never make it past the first 20 minutes. If you see, when I saw when I saw Independence Day, and those helicopters were flying towards the big spaceship there, and I saw that one of them was a black pilot, I knew the aliens were evil.
Oh no!
Because I was like, well, I wonder if the aliens are really good or bad. And I saw one of the helicopter pilots flying towards it was a black pilot. I said, well, they're bad because there's this poor guy's going to get this Chinook's going to get blown out of the sky. But at any rate,
wait, one last thing about Mickey. I really appreciate her love of American history.
Yes.
I have a true love of American history. I always do. I'm always given. You cannot know what to do in the present unless you know what happened in the past. And it's a solid point, frankly, that the students knew history better than Rand Paul.
Yeah,
and I was really proud of it.
Well, and the funny thing about history is this, is that history constantly changes because it is constantly interpreted differently. People take the same thing today. It's a historical fact and twist and distort and interpret it differently. And now all of a sudden something that happened 50 years ago is totally different than it was. And a guy that did something who was some terrible, most of the time people who are like radical bad guys during their time, 50 years later we look back and call them heroes. Isn't it funny how that works? But at any rate, speaking of history, we've got Tespa. And we've got a long history with Tespa.
Tespa,
welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Tespa.
Thanks for calling.
Good evening, my friends. Yes, we have a long history.
Yes, we do.
Written constitutions are very important, no question about them. But constitutions, written constitutions, are something recent, only maybe a few hundred years old. Society has lived for thousands and thousands of years without written constitutions. Why? Because society accepted parts of it because of religion, because of living together for thousands of years. Society lived in peace and harmony for thousands of years, even if there were problems here and there. But just look at the last 20 years. What kind of things are going in the world? Ethnic cleansing, genocide, war, drone war, drone station all over the world. Look at what's happening. Just look at what's happening in Congo to women, to men, and look at what's happening in Ethiopia right now, ethnic cleansing and genocide, and the State Department doesn't say a word about it. Thousands of people, the Amharas, the Anyuas, all sorts of people in Ethiopia, in their thousands, are being ethnically cleansed, and the State Department is saying a word.
Thank you very much, Tespa. Thanks a lot, Tespa. Appreciate it. We don't want to stray too far away from our subject, and certainly we don't want to get on Ethiopia and the Congo. Very, very important issues, but right now we do kind of like to stay focused. We're talking about Rand Paul. We're talking about his speech at Howard University, race, politics in America, 202-588-0893. John, welcome to WPFW.
Hey, how's it going?
Wonderful, wonderful.
Hey, John.
Hey, so I don't want to quibble with your remarks about Rand Paul. I think, generally, I think the criticism is he was trying to gloss over
the last 50 years.
Yeah, the last 50 years. But I think the point that I don't think is arguable is that for the majority of the Republican history, it was very supportive of civil rights.
No one disputes that.
No one disputes that.
Abraham Lincoln, Thaddeus Stevens, Frederick Douglass. I can give you a whole host of terrific,
right,
wonderful Republicans.
Keep in mind. Keep in mind, we weren't arguing that.
Right.
What we were saying was this: the labels have changed. The Republicans that were in support of civil rights were the left. The abolitionists were the far left, and they were Republicans. The Democrats during the Civil War, remember where they were? They were in the South.
And there
were
even
slave owners.
Even as late as the 1960s,
right,
there were still some liberal Republicans who supported the Civil Rights Act. I dare say you can't find them anymore.
So my point.
Name a liberal Republican who strongly supported the civil rights.
I'm going to let you talking about. So remember, my point was not that Republicans or Democrats, it was who they were. The left has always been in support of civil rights, of women's rights, of equality for groups. The right has always opposed that. Do you dispute that?
Did we lose John?
John, please call back.
Please call back, John. 202. We didn't want to cut you off. Yeah. We want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, 202-588-0893. John, call back and you come right, you go right to the front of the line. 202-588-0893. John, if we get you, and let our producer, Bill Witherspoon, who keeps this going. I don't want to forget. Bill Witherspoon's the man who makes this show happening. But, if John calls, we want to get back,
We did not mean to drop you off.
Is that John? Yeah, that's John.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
We're going to get him right back on. We do not want that. He's an important caller. We want people to
disagree.
Dispute things.
Absolutely.
He's the most, he's important.
Go ahead, John.
John, are you there?
Hey, this is John again.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Great.
Okay, so what were you saying, John?
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, the point I'm trying to make is, while I think Rand Paul is open to criticism on his glossing over, and I think you did state it correctly, there's a long history there, what I do think is, if, as you say, you know, it's hard to get caught up in labels or it's a little dangerous. I think the common perception today, or the easy label to say, oh, well, Republicans, they're the party of racists. And again, I'm not going to quibble. There's probably racists in both sides of Democratic and, you know, Republicans. My point is there's a huge portion of Republicans who have no dispute with minorities and civil rights, and their positions and policies are what's best for the country. So,
John, let me ask you about something very specific, if I could. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead,
if you want to say that, oh, you know, that the Republicans are the party of the racist, it does a disservice to the vast majority of people in America who are not racist at all, on either side, Democratic, left, right, southern, northern. Are there racists in the country? Certainly. Certainly. But it doesn't do the nation a service to say that Republicans are the party of racists.
John, I want to ask you something very specifically, because I want to talk about the Republican Party of 2012. I don't think there's any dispute about the Republican Party of 1865, but that time is long past. The Republican Party of 2012, in more than 20 states, the majority legislature, so we're talking not one or two or five races, we're talking a majority, not even a majority, 90-95% of the Republicans in the majority of states in the United States voted to make it as difficult as possible for African Americans to vote. Now, to be fair, they weren't doing it because they hate black people. They were doing it because the black people vote for Democrats. They weren't doing it because they think blacks shouldn't vote. They were doing it because they think that no one should vote Democratic. So they also made it really hard for students to vote. They made it hard for the elderly to vote. And they made sure that people could not get picture IDs really easily. Do you defend that conduct? And can you understand why people think it's racist to keep blacks from voting, even if the purpose isn't racism per se, but just to keep down the Democratic vote?
Well, listen, again, I don't want to do a tit-for-tat on every little thing. Here's what I would say. For me, personally, I support I'm a Republican conservative voter. I support laws that require some form of identification at the polling booth.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Because
and I don't care
John,
if you're black, red, white. Hispanic,
how about this, John? Here's the solution that I always propose. If you're people who want picture IDs, it's a very simple solution. It's really easy to do. We have digital cameras today. Anyone who walks into a voting booth, you immediately take their picture and you hand them an ID, and you have them sign under penalty of perjury that they are who they say they are. And if they're not, you put them in jail for 10 years. Can we agree on that? That way, everyone who wants to vote gets to vote, and anyone who votes fraudulently goes to jail for 10 years. Can we agree on that as a solution? Because I've never found a single Republican support that. They claim they want IDs, but they really just don't want people to vote.
No, I think that's a very sensible approach.
Okay, not a single Republican in the country has endorsed that, but I hope you will encourage Republicans too. Because if Republicans endorse giving everyone a photo ID, then no one has a problem with
the
photo ID. The problem is that people are. I'll tell you one quick story. In Georgia, this was the election of I think 2008. Georgia wanted to require everyone to have a voter ID, and they provided stations all across the state, except in the city of Atlanta, where there were no stations where people could get a voter ID. Because let's face it, a lot of blacks live in Atlanta.
Well, here's the other thing, too, and I think it's important because of the discussion that you and Mark were having, John. When you talk about racism, and that is, then this is an issue that's often argued in court in cases involving race discrimination. The intent is not important. The effect is important. You can say, we do not intend, we have no intent to discriminate against black people. However,
we don't hate blacks, we just don't think they should vote.
And we don't want to discriminate against blacks, and we have no intent to. But the effect of the law is extremely discriminatory. It has a significantly a negative impact on one particular group. See, that's what happens with the issue of race and racism constantly within the argument. People say, I'm not a racist. Well, I don't care if you're racist. If you walk up and there's a black guy and you bop him over the head with a baseball bat, you say, I'm not a racist. Well, it doesn't matter. The effect of your, well, the black guy got hit in the head with a baseball bat. If there's a law, if there is any action that has a significantly negative impact on one particular group, this group is totally screwed.
I'm not anti-gay. I just don't think gay people should get married. Well, you may not think that, but if you want to use the law to keep your fellow Americans from having equal rights under the law, then you are opposed to that group. Whatever your intent is, your actions are unequal.
Right. So whenever I discuss the issue of race, I always say, let's discard the issue of intent and only discuss the issue of effect. Because if I do something, even if I don't intend to hurt people, if they get hurt, I need to think about what I'm doing and say, hey, I didn't mean to hurt anybody, but a lot of people are getting hurt. Maybe I shouldn't do that again. Sorry about that, John. Curtis, we got Curtis. Hey, Curtis, please, you got to turn your radio down. I know we've been a long time and kind of long-winded on the air, but turn your radio down so that we don't get the feedback and we can hear you clearly.
And then go ahead. We'd like to hear from you.
Hello,
Curtis.
Are you there?
Yes, we are. Curtis. Thanks for holding us so long,
can
Curtis.
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes,
you're on the
loud
air.
And clear, Curtis.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks for taking my call. Here's the situation. I have to applaud Ron Paul coming forward and talking to the students at Howard University.
It's Rand Paul, but big deal. He's the son of Ron Paul.
He came to that university trying to defend the past Republicans' behavior on how they have treated us, and to actually say that what they've done has been justified. But we all know that perception is reality. In our perception, they have not treated us fairly and correctly, and not even to go into the past history of the Republican Party, but the simple fact is what they need to do is come to us hat in hand and pardon, ask for our pardon, just like Bill Clinton did, ask for our forgiveness for the past wrongs that they've done to us. And they need to listen to us and to find out what we feel they need to do in order to get on our good side. And I take my answers off there.
Thank you. Thank you. Brilliant. Brilliant. And see, there's a problem with that. Here's the problem. Because as conservatives, the foundation of the conservative worldview is that you have to reinforce and spread the conservative worldview. So if they were to come to African Americans and say, what do you want us to do? Their answer would be policy driven. And they cannot possibly alter any of their policies because their policies are a religion to them. So they don't want to talk to people who are going to, they've created a reality in which black people don't like them because black people are too stupid to know that the things they're doing are in their best interest. So therefore, they have to explain to these stupid, ignorant black people why their policies are best for black people. But they can't ask black people because another reality will surface, a reality in which black people say, we're not stupid, we understand policies, your policies are not in our best interest, most of us are in the poor, the working class, the middle class,
we're
either in those groups, the poor, the working poor, working class, middle class, that's where we are, and if policies hurt those groups, they hurt us, your policies help the top one half of 1%, sorry dude, change your policies, they can't face that reality.
And even many African Americans in the top one half of 1%, remember remember where they came from and don't want to forget. I mean, Bill Cosby certainly cares about the working poor, even though clearly the man is not of the working poor, or Oprah or any of the others. One other thing I want to point out, there used to be, as recently as 20 years ago, there were still liberal Republicans around. Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island comes to mind. Stryker, I think, of Connecticut.
There was some moderate Jack Kemp.
Jack Kemp wasn't as liberal as
compared to those clowns today.
Absolutely. What's interesting is that they virtually all left the Republican Party. Even the close to moderates, and they're just gone now. The Republican Party has purged them.
That's a good point. And we got one more caller, Keith. But let me say this: that's a very good point. And I'll tell you why. Because our caller a few minutes ago,
Colin Powell, would be an example of someone who used to be a Republican. He claims he's still a Republican, but he's endorsing Obama and he's criticized Republicans right and left because he just can't stand the party as it is today.
The guy said basically all Republicans aren't racist. But here's what happened. When they executed the Southern Strategy, they created a party where racists now felt very comfortable,
right,
where the racists could say, this is the home for me, I feel comfortable. So while, of course, clearly everybody, the Republican, is not a racist, but you have created a home for the racist, and if you are a member of some group, the minority group, you don't want much to do with the group. We've got a couple minutes here. We've got Keith. Keith has been on here a long time. Thank you for your patience, Keith.
Oh, thank you for having me. I just wanted to touch on that point you just made, where they, it's a very good point that a lot of it is a religion to them. But I'd like to point out that I think that President Obama is a conservative, and that the Republican Party is not holding true to those conservative values. And if they have, they would, maybe respect some individual liberty that that Rand Paul, he didn't really touch on a lot of that. And actually, what my comment was is that I can respect Rand Paul for being true to those kind of conservative values, and you really know where he stands.
Yeah, I don't dislike Rand Paul at all. I disagree with him, but I agree with you.
A drug testing corporation is going to come and pay him $15,000, and then all of a sudden he wants to drug test welfare people.
That's right. But he's sincere,
which is the case with a lot of the people championing that they get those kind of things. But what I was trying to call in about was that he believes that maybe the issues of segregation should be left up to the states, and I'd like to share a personal story here that kind of touches on the way the Boy Scouts of America are about to treat gay people.
Right.
Well, so I recruited some black kids from Haiti into my local troop, and they kicked me out.
Really?
They kicked me out, and basically that's what the policy is now for the Boy Scouts for gay people. It's like, okay, if the local troop has a problem with it, then they'll just go ahead and find another troop or something like that.
The
thing with Rand Paul is, okay, does he want the states to enforce it? And then we're going to run into a situation where me as a white person, being friends with black people, is affected, and discriminated against because I affiliate with black people.
Keith, I'm just curious. Did the Boy Scouts tell you it was because you brought Haitians in? Or did they make up some other reason? I'm just curious.
My dad waited. He was involved in the troop, and all of a sudden we switched. And I didn't know, I'm a Cub Scout at the time, and that's under like 10 or whatever. And so I waited until we switched, until I was older in the Boy Scouts, and then he told me, what had happened.
I didn't think they'd tell you directly.
Yeah.
But obviously that still goes on. And that also tells you why we have to stamp out private discrimination, which is why Rand Paul is just dead wrong about private discrimination.
And see, here's the other thing, too. You got to understand, libertarians and conservatives are different. And here's one of the ways that I see that they very much are different. The reactionaries, the conservatives, the right wing in America, in the American context of right wing, because we have our own context of the right wing and conservatives, they want to use the government to enforce their social and religious beliefs and values.
That's right.
They are hypocritical. They do not believe in
liberty.
And they don't believe in consistent application of the law and the rule
That's
of
right.
law.
That's right.
They believe in arbitrary application of the law, however they have to do it to enforce their social and religious values.
Justice Scalia is a good example of that.
Whereas libertarians tend to be more consistent.
That's true.
They are consistent with their, if someone is, if you talk to a libertarian, they're more likely, in my opinion, not to be racist. In my opinion, a libertarian is more likely to say, this is the way I believe things are, this is the way they should be, and go consistently with them, as opposed to when you go to the right wing, the reactionary,
It's about social whoa, looks like
we're just
out of
coming
time,
out. Let me say real quick, racist or not, libertarians are still dangerous because they would take away a lot of the rights like Social Security, Medicare, and student loans.
Civil rights laws.
That we all enjoy, including civil rights laws. So I respect their sincerity, but I'm far from a libertarian.
What I was gonna say is they may not be their intent may not be racist.
Right.
But the effect of their policies would be exceptionally racist.
Exactly.
My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, Mark, how can they do it?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, Facebook as well.
Facebook me, Garland Nixon, or Garland N. That's Garland in the first letter of my last name, which is N. GarlandN at gmail.com. GarlandN at gmail.com. Facebook me. Twitter at Garland Nixon. See you next. I will talk with you next Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News Program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.